Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. Now, earlier this year, possibly last year, in fact, 25 individuals, let's call it a squad, were taken to a secret location in a former industrial area of East London. There, they all lived together and worked together every week. They had to do a task and work together to perform this task, the task being try to beat another team at football. But within that 25 group, there were those that were faithfuls and those that were traitors. Now, my guests today are huge fans of this project and watch it eagerly and are more than keen to discuss which of these 25 are faithful and which are perhaps not as they seem, i.e. professional footballers, or at least good ones. Here to discuss these issues arising are, as always, Jim Grant.
Good evening. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, actually. Very well.
Are you as transfixed by this project as I am?
Absolutely. Rigidly so.
I've binge-watched every episode. We go down at the end of the season.
Oh, spoilers.
Spoiler alert. I'm so sorry. We can edit this bit out. Also joining us, it's two titans of radio. They are wireless warriors. First of all, we've got George Mann.
Good evening.
Hello, George. How are you?
I'm very well indeed.
It's been a while. You've been unable to do this every time.
I know. I'm doing a lot of shift work now because I'm now working in TV, not radio.
Oh.
Which involves me working. Yeah, I thank you for the hand gestures, Mark. But that involves weekend, lots of weekend and evening shifts. So, I'm not around a lot in the evenings sometimes. So,
stupid people's radio. That's what we call it, don't we? And also joining us this week, it is another radio titan. It is, of course, Mark Sandell. Hello, Mark.
Good evening, everyone.
It's wonderful. What a wonderful collection we have. And it's a shame that we're so populated with strong opinions because we only really have one game of football to talk about. Since Jim and I did this last week, we had the game against Wolverhampton Wanderers, which we lost. We lost that game. Now, Jim, you and I sort of said that, I think you said that out of the next two games, we wanted probably a minimum of 3 points. What we've got is 1 point from that. We now throw a lot of weight onto the Everton game at the weekend. But I think there was a sort of loose idea that it was going to be this little sort of trilogy of games, the Leeds, the Wolves and the Everton, that were kind of pretty much decide Moyes' fate. And things have arguably gone tits up fairly early on. A draw and a defeat is really not the way to go. George, what do you reckon?
I reckon we're absolutely stuffed at the moment unless we make a change. I watched the game on Saturday. It's followed sadly familiar pattern. We looked a bit busy, we looked a bit involved, then we completely lost it. I thought Fornells was a big improvement, but we've in the last four league games, we've conceded conceded three goals from a throw-in, and we managed to do something fantastic by conceding a goal from our own corner on Saturday, which I think, having taken the piss out of Leeds the night before for doing the same with the Leeds friend, was kind of rough justice, really. But it's symptomatic, isn't it, of the whole thing, that if you've got some sort of level of control on the game, but simple things like defending the throw-in and not conceding from your own corner, it just completely escapes at the moment. And I can't really see a way back at the moment unless something is done to drastically change the way the team attacks games and thinks about games.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, that period during the World Cup, where although they were sort of just friendlies, we seemed to be putting in some quite good work. that things were going to sort of maybe hit the ground running when we came back after that break. But just a routine defeat to Brentford, a sort of a chatty 1-0 win, and then just another defeat, looks like business as usual.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know where the sort of turning point is going to come. You think that, you say, the work that was done during the World Cup, you could also argue our European campaign, which has been very good, and you'd like to think that there would be a sort of a kick on from that. It's just hard to know. I watched the first half of the Wolves game and watched the highlights of the second half. I didn't see a team that were not playing for their manager. I saw a pretty poor and pretty average team, but they didn't look like their heads were down, or they weren't chasing back, or they didn't. It's just, where's that spark coming from? And it's not like other teams have either got a new manager, which I know I'd be very surprised if we don't end up talking about that. Other teams have got players like a long injury list, and they're looking forward to getting some key players back. We're not in either of those positions. So it's very hard to know what will be that moment. You know, for example, Fantasyland, bear with me on this. Let's say we beat Everton 4-0 on a roaring game. We're three up after half an hour. We see them off in the second half. There's no danger. We're not sweating or anything like that. Crowd starts singing. Everyone's saying, I still would not be convinced walking away from that. Is that going to turn us around? Is that going to... And that's my problem. I didn't see a team that were lazy in any way at all, but I did see a team that was short of ideas. Jim, your face there suggested that you disagree with the lazy thing.
Well, I wouldn't say no. I don't disagree with the lazy, but I think, nor indeed that they're not necessarily sort of not playing for him. But I think it's tight. It's small percentages, isn't it? It's not quite committing to tackles, not quite winning second balls, not quite waiting part. You know, it's that malaise that runs through a team that lacks belief, it lacks confidence. And I totally agree with George in terms of the game followed a kind of grimly familiar pattern, but and he's right about making defensive errors, but I think the real problem is you can't score. We just simply don't look like... No. We could be playing that game still and we won't have scored. And I think a team that knows it can't score more than one goal or two, is always up against it. And we keep conceding the first goal. So I think it does have an impact. I mean, I've been reasonably impressed with Aguerd since he came in, but he jogged back after that corner. I mean, he could have got back. You know, we've seen videos of him sort of sprinting back to make cover tackles. He jogged back. So did Rice, actually. So, I think there's a real deep malaise seems to have really taken hold.
I only remembered today that the goal we scored against Arsenal was a penalty. One of the goals against Leeds was a penalty. Yeah. You know, it's like we really, really are not scoring goals. And every team in the division except us does have the ability to score goals. We almost don't. They're penalties won by Bowen's one tactic, which is to run into the box to the point where he's tripped over, like Paul Ince did in that game against Holland in Euro 96, ran into the area and made himself tripped over.
Add to that the other two goals against Brentford were from 25 yards or more. Mm. So we simply don't look like being able to score a goal in open play inside the penalty area.
Mark, what were you going to say?
Sorry, I was just going to sort of back up both your points, really. You know, I was looking at some stats today. We've only got 15 goals. Only Wolves have scored fewer than us. Before the Wolves game, we were second in the Premier League for crosses in open play into the box, 277. Goals scored from them, none. We've got two players in the top six best crossers, or, you know, highest amount of crosses in the Premier League, which is Coufal and Cresswell. And we've not scored a goal from that. We scored 15 goals from set pieces last season. We've got two so far.
They're just aimless crosses, aren't they? That we wait until the opposing team has every single player back in their penalty area, then gently prod the ball into an area where the goalkeeper can catch it or their central defenders can head it away.
Aimless is one, but maybe not enough players in the box is another. Mm.
Yeah. It's the speed of players in the box as well. I mean, we talked a lot about, you talked about the last couple of weeks about the speed of the midfield or the balance of the midfield. I just don't think they know who should be the person leading the charge in for midfield to back up Scamacca or Antonio or Bowen stuck out on the wing. It's just, we don't seem, you know, if we're going to get that ability to get balls into the box, we've got no ability to get people on the end to sort it out. We're always outnumbered. We're always, you know, either they're not quick enough getting into the box, or you've got Benrahma slowing it up. So by the time he does get into the box, it's almost half time, and they've got 11 players behind the ball.
Any players that might have the kind of potential to turn things around this season? I'm not sure there are any. The thing about Paqueta and Scamacca is that they're young. They're sort of young. They're not. They lack sort of guile. Benrahma, as I've sort of said many times in this, but just lacks guile in spades. I think he just doesn't. He doesn't really have much of a footballing brain. Antonio sort of occasionally does, but very often doesn't. We don't really have anyone who looks like they might do something that the opposition aren't expecting. Do you know what I mean? Players that went, I'm not having this, and sort of took the game by the scruff of the neck. Dix from the left back position would, if we were like a couple of goals down, you could see him go, I'm going to try and win us this game. You see Rice do that in games, but again, he'll sort of put into action an attack that then slows down and he gets the ball back from
Mark Noble.
Di Canio, obviously, Di Canio would just, you know, turn it on. When we went 3-0 down against Manchester United and he more or less pulled us level, except for Van Gaal's save.
Arnautovic.
You know. Well, Arnautovic also did things that defenders weren't expecting him to do, but his teammates were. We just have no guile in attack at all. I think you're right, George. I mean, I think, you know, and we've said many times on this podcast that Fornals has been very unfortunate to be the sort of fall guy with the reorganisation of the team, because he was someone that would look to turn defence into attack with one touch of the ball, one long ball out of defence to a runner, you know, and try and take the other team by surprise. And, you know, I think he's at the moment, it looks like he's got to be involved.
And we had our best spell against Wolves when he came, admittedly they were sitting back a bit, when he came inside and Benrahma came on, we started dominating possession and, you know, But that, again, it was another case of starting to play with that kind of intensity that, when it's too late, really. You know, we do not begin games at an intense level. Rice does take the game by the scruff of the neck, but generally, only in the second half. You don't see it take, it doesn't take the first 15 minutes of a game by the scruff of the neck. And we are frequently just, you know, down on possession, down, you know, not. We do this half-hearted, half-assed pressing thing, which is neither one thing nor the other. They sort of move up the pitch, but they don't get really tight. And you know, it was noticeable that when Wolves pressed, they got very, very close. They put the player on the ball under under pressure. And I think you're right. I think it's very, very difficult to see where the inspiration is going to come from. Of the two you mentioned, Phil, I like Scamacca, and I think ultimately you can see he wants to. He was almost trying too hard at times in a way. You can see that he's got good feet and physicality, can score goals, different kinds of goals. You know, you can see that in the long term, hopefully, you know, you get him integrated to a system and he'll be successful. I'm beginning, it's beginning to feel to me like 51 million quid spent on the wrong player, Paqueta. It just doesn't seem to be gelling into it at all.
I just wonder I don't understand what the process was for buying Scamacca and Paqueta at the moment, because Moyes inherited Haller and Anderson and moved them on.
Yeah, right.
And then bought Haller and Anderson 2 years later. And I just, you know, it does slightly worry me. I mean, I know you talked about having an international centre forward, but, you know, Scamacca is a big lad, but he's a ball to feet guy. He's not, you know, he's not Duncan Ferguson despite his size. And he.
No.
And he's a guy who thrives on possession. And we got, to, you know, both Paqueta and Scamacca thrive on possession. And it's not something that we are built to do, or that we want to do. He's tried to change the team, but without changing the philosophy.
I agree with you, George. I think that's an excellent point. I just wonder, had we bought them in January last year, because this malaise that we've been talking about has been going on for the calendar year of 2022. It didn't just start this season. We tailed off. Our Europa League run masked it slightly. I wonder if they'd come in a year ago, whether they came in almost too late, this team. Because defenders of David Moyes will say, for 2 years, we've overachieved. And that's what he would say. He'd say, we've exceeded expectations. And, you know, they talk about the Liverpool team at the moment being kind of knackered because they're forever chasing Manchester City. You know, that's their kind of, and we've kind of overachieved over these last couple of years. That's why we're so tired. We've had internationals, all the World Cup stuff, which I know other people had. That's part of the argument. But we freshened it up. We have freshened it up. It's not the same team that we put out last year. So that is that's where that argument struggles a bit for me.
No, and I mean, I think, you know, Moyes is now, I mean, obviously it just gets, in a way, more shallow every week, but it's not really entirely inaccurate when after every game he says, you know, I'm disappointed because we played quite well. I had quite a civilized conversation on Twitter, a non-angry conversation last night with a really nice guy. I said that penalty miss against Nottingham Forest earlier this season is going to feel, you know, or I hope it doesn't, but could feel pretty redolent of the Canute penalty miss in 2003 when we went down. You know, I think if our attacking team had got some confidence early on and, you know, trusted our ability to score goals, this would have been a completely different season. I think all of this sort of playing well in games and just not scoring and then losing those games is almost more dispiriting than if we were just playing shit. Because I think, you know, he would probably then just drop a raft of players and start, you know, bringing in Okoflex and players like that, who's probably out on loan. But, you know what I mean. I think he keeps thinking that set of players is going to turn a corner. And he's not entirely crazy in thinking that because, you know, as Mark says, it's not out of the realm of possibility that we spank Everton 4-0 at the weekend. I don't think we will. In fact, I think we'll lose. And I think that next week he'll be fine.
If we do spank Everton 4-0, then we've got Newcastle, Chelsea, and whatever else coming up. So it doesn't really make much difference. And I know what you say about them playing well, but they play well. And then you just almost, my kind of enthusiasm and trust in Moyes evaporated about halfway through or three quarters way through the first half against Brentford at home, where we did play well for a bit. We conceded a goal and then we conceded that absolute, you know, that ridiculous second goal where Cresswell got done coming back. And I, after that, I just saw that there wasn't that. What did he do? What was he going to do to change it? What was he going to do to, you know, the fact that we were weak in midfield, that we were weak and, you know, able to be picked off by ridiculous counter-attacking moves? And he had a full bench. You can't say he hasn't got a decent bench to choose from. We're not talking about putting four academy players and two sub-goalkeepers on the bench anymore. But he doesn't seem to have that ability to pull a lever to do anything to change circumstances, either from game to game or during a game.
I think that's true. And in a way, you could argue that on form, Benrahma deserves to start because he has been one of our better players. But then he's the only player who can make an impact off the bench, isn't he? And he's very good in that respect. So, yeah, we haven't got the kind of weird wild card of a Yarmolenko anymore. I think you're right to look back to that January transfer window, Mark. I'm not sure about the particular players in question, but I certainly think we are paying long term for not doing any business in that window and starting to address the problems that were very, very clear to everybody and must have been clear to Moyes, you'd have thought, at that time. And then we've tried to sign, tried to integrate too many players at one go. It was a bit blunderbuss stuff in the summer. Been a bit unlucky with injuries with Egerd and Cornet, although possibly Cornet, maybe the due diligence wasn't properly done on his injury, prone nature. I think the big cock up is increasingly looking like Paqueta to me, because there was a lot of money invested in that, and he clearly isn't the player they thought they were getting, and he's not the right one. He wasn't the problem, really. That position alongside Rice wasn't the problem.
I don't know. Suchek's not having a very good season.
No.
I think he is the Suchek upgrade. I think he should be played next to Rice, and I think he does a fairly good job there. I mean, given our sort of strength in the central part of the pitch, it was bewildering, Jim, and we turned to each other and said against Brentford that we are doing nothing up the middle of the park. We're trying to put crosses in onto Scamacca's head when he is literally surrounded by tall footballers, just utterly pointless crosses from Benrahma, Cresswell and Soufal. Utterly pointless crosses that are just never going to reach him. And goes into the hands of the goalkeeper, who can just kick it the full length of the pitch, and suddenly we're under the cosh again.
Yeah. There are issues with this. It does look like bad squad management now, doesn't it? Bowen really should be dropped. He really isn't justifying the starting position at the moment. But there isn't really anyone else we've got in the squad to play there.
Bowen may not be justifying his starting position where he is, but he's been stuck out wide. He's almost, he seems to be almost physically attached to the tram lines at the moment.
That's weird, really weird though, because that Brentford game we played three at the back, which is normally, you do that to give yourself wing backs, but both Benrahma and Bowen went and stood on the touchline as well. And sort of we're trying to sort of overlap with, and the Brentford game had Emerson in it. I said this on last week's podcast. We had three wingers on the left flank that just tapped the ball between each other until one of them crossed it over, 90 seconds after they should have done. Very strange, I thought. That 3-5-2 got us further up the pitch, but then we just had a load of people tapping it back and forth for minutes.
That's right. We play endless triangles in those areas between the touchline and the penalty area, don't we? And invariably, by the time somebody gets in a position to cross the ball, there's loads of defenders covering everything, or it's a shit cross,
Mark, what were you about to say?
Well, just to say, George, I'll take your point, even if we were, and all of you saying, even if we were to spank Everton 4-0, it is then Newcastle, Chelsea, Tottenham, Forest and Brighton. But I'd prefer, whoever is managing, I'd prefer to go into those off the back of a 4-0 win than I would of a home defeat. Otherwise, we are kind of, and I'm also not sure, if we're saying that certain players aren't performing, they're knackered, whatever, being played up to, I know we'll probably talk about who might come in if Moyes was to go. Mm. What can they realistically do with that lot that we haven't? We've said we haven't got players off the bench now, or as you say, with the exception of Benrahma. So I'm just saying, even with this, you know, even if it's a Daesh, you kind of organise someone, or if it's a, you know, I'm are we sort of stuck with what we've got? In which case, I mean, well, I was looking at the last two seasons we went down. At this stage, halfway stage in 2002, when we went down with 42 points, we had 14 points at the halfway mark. And so we got 28 points in the second half. We're looking at getting, well, we've got to get 25 in the second half here. In 2010-11, I know it was a miserable season, we finished with 33. We were 19th on the halfway stage with 16 points, and we only managed to get so. So we're right in that. We're right. Not that we're in any doubt about that. We're right in that mess now.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
So again, I'm just trying to sort of think with what we've got and almost no sign, as far as I can
see. Let's get into that after this message.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back. That's where we should go next, really, is what is it that can happen moving forward? Funnily enough, Mark, you know, those are two interesting seasons to talk about, the sort of 2002-2003, because, you know, we went down with 42 points, played a lot of very good football in that season, but did lose games. I think there's a lot of similarities between that season and this season. We did have a caretaker manager come in, didn't we? Trevor Brooking. Who did do very well and, you know, could almost have got us out of it. We had a good return under his. On the other hand, that sort of 2010-11 season, I remember walking away from one of the games with Sam Delaney going, we won't go down now. We'd just beaten Liverpool with Zavon Hines's excellent performance. We got Piquion and Obinna. I think one of his balls has just been spotted by the Ellis Space Telescope on the far reaches of the universe, still out there. But they seemed good. Stanislas was coming good. Zavon Hines looked good. We had a good little run of results, but then it just slumped back on its haunches and we kind of slid to an ignominious sort of close at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a panic about the time, wasn't there, when we were supposed to be recruiting Martin O'Neill in 2011.
Yeah.
Then we didn't. Then there was a little bit of a blip, but then it just slid. It was, you know, we finished bottom, didn't we, that year, I think.
We did.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was, you know, sacked in the tunnel after Everton, after Wigan.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it was just such an utterly grim season. And I do want, yeah. The thing is, I mean, I think the comparison to 2002 may almost be more relevant, and I don't think it's the players. You look at that squad; that's a talented squad. Yeah, we've got Zuma coming back. We've got, you know, good players all the way through there. But I just think it needs a new voice. I just don't think they're getting any. They're not getting a response from the manager, or the manager doesn't know what to do. I think you get the feeling that Moyes might be kind of brain fried at the moment. That he doesn't kind of. I mean, the stuff that there's some clips of him from a. Some podcasts he did for a business. He seemed to be talking about a club that was still challenging for Champions League places, rather than a club that is, you know, needs to dig themselves out of a hole.
It was the Diary of a CEO, wasn't it?
That was it. Podcast. Yeah.
That was and that's the one where he revealed that he turned down the chance to sign Alvarez, wasn't it?
As a badge of honour. Almost said, "Well, I knew all about Alvarez."
But I mean, I think to be fair to him, I think he was saying we all make big mistakes, and that was obviously a big mistake. But it is hard to know. I think he would point again, and I'm not doing the kind of, you know, the Moyes apologist role here, but I do think, you know, we've had a great couple of years. Let's be fair, we you know, and I think that is he will point to his Everton record and say, that his first season was 17th, second season was 4th, third season was 11th, and then it went 6th, 5th, 5th, 8th, 7th, 7th, 6th. You know,
yeah,
with
yeah,
you know, and I suspect, George, that would be why he was talking in that way, that he probably still sees us as a top 6-7 club.
He
was quoted in the Standard like yesterday or the day before saying, you know, the new players need time to bed in. But the problem is we're really like in the relegation zone. And it's like how many more games if we play 5 or 6 more games as with these new players bed in, we're further and further in the mire and it's harder to get out. And if we kind of go, oh, well, we lost that one, but we're slowly, you know, moving up where there's a genuine uphill trend here, it will be too late. You'll run out of points, you know.
And I'm not seeing signs that the new players are bedding in more than they were. I'm seeing kind of a diminution in their returns, a sort of diminution in their ability to feel attached to the game, and that's the problem.
They're not passing to Scamacca. I just don't think they're passing to him enough. You know, they pass to him when he's surrounded by players and try and put it on his head.
I certainly think they lost faith in what. I don't know. I agree with you, Mark, what you said right at the start, that I don't think they're not trying or you know, sort of, kind of throwing him under the bus. I just think you're right. His head, I think, is scrambled. I don't think he sees a way to change things in a kind of meaningful sense. There was that flirtation with three at the back of Brentford. I thought, well, actually, we did play quite well for a bit under that, but that's been immediately abandoned.
Again, yeah, he did it. He did it twice. Then didn't do it at Leeds.
Yeah.
God knows what happened.
So it's sad, really. I think he has given us a couple of great seasons, but you know, as you say, we are just sleepwalking to relegation, not getting spanked, staying in games. That pattern. How many 1-0 defeats this season where we've been sort of all right, you know, and had a little spell. Like even at Old Trafford, you know, we battered them for the last half hour, for God's sake.
Yeah, absolutely. Should have got something out of that.
But
didn't.
Because we didn't play with the same intensity early enough. Everton away, another very good example where probably had the better of the game overall. You know, lost 1-0 at Forest in a game where we absolutely, you know, smashed them, really.
So this brings us back to, it sounds like we possibly all think that there is actually the playing staff to turn this season around, to start getting some results. So it is a managerial change that could affect that. Do we agree with that? Do we think that the playing staff can do that?
I think there are some decent players there, definitely. We've seen them be good. So I think they can play with greater intensity, and we've seen that.
Like when Moyes came in after Bilic and started to really get a tune out of Arnautovic. Mm. You know, it's possible that someone else could take our other giant tattooed love god and turn him into something, you know, just play with someone else up the front, get the ball to him quickly in positions where he likes to pick it up and run or play it out wide, you know. It feels like, you know, there are the sort of people there to do that.
I mean, I just feels that we completely got ourselves into a situation where we don't know the way out. Is Sullivan paralysed by what's been going on? He hasn't said anything at all. Not even, you know, we haven't even heard Hugh Southall coming out and with his usual mouthpiece stuff. And I mean, you talk about the playing squad. You know, if it is the playing squad that Moyes is suggesting isn't kind of performing the way he wants to, well, we brought this player squad together under this brand new recruitment regime, which was supposed, you know, we took Man City's recruitment head, and we were supposed to be in a situation where we wouldn't be in this situation because we would recruit players that suited our style. And we seem to have done the opposite. I think, again, it comes down to the fact that the whole club's in a mess, not just the manager. And we don't really know, have an answer of how to get out of it, because we're a moribund club as a dynamic entity. We don't know how to run a football club. And as usual, they just haven't done the work to get us in a more positive situation.
There are sort of rumours that possible replacement managers are being sort of identified, whether they're going to be caretaker managers. I mean, I sort of quite like the idea of not rushing into appointing a new manager on a kind of 6-year contract right away. Possibly, wasn't Benitez a sort of caretaker manager at Everton?
Chelsea.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And he was full time at Everton. It didn't
end time at Everton.
It didn't go well at Everton, did it?
No. But the caretaker Everton. One was at Chelsea, wasn't it? And when who'd gone then? Was it after Mourinho?
Scolari? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Can't remember.
You know, it feels like there is a little bit of a vogue for the caretaker manager, often because they don't do a good enough job and get fired. Didn't Watford have about 3 in the second half of the season?
Well,
1 year.
They had a spell of changing manager every year, pretty much, didn't they?
Yeah, but I'm talking about when they were doing badly in the second half of a season, and didn't they get Ranieri and he did badly, so they got someone else. They got Ranieri at Christmas. And then
wasn't Billy McKinley involved at some stage? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. But
anyway, it shows what we are, that we're comparing ourselves to that circus of a club. It's probably the only club that's run worse than we are.
Yeah, I know. But it's just, you know, the idea of a caretaker manager sort of, in a way, it sort of appeals to me rather than sort of, because we're being panicked into making a change, and I don't want to make a panicky change. Get someone a long-term contract
but that's the situation we're in, isn't it? I mean, unfortunately, it is a panicky change because of the situation that we're in. I agree with George. I mean, Benitez's most recent experience is Everton and Newcastle, two teams at that particular time. Everton hasn't changed, an absolute mess and a nightmare, and to be honest, probably a bit beneath someone of his. Of his quality, you know, and so I'd be hard. I mean, bearing in mind we've had talks with him, I think, in the past. Again,
he was on a list.
I just think
he was supposed to be coming to us. Then as Bubba's at the Bernabeu took him, didn't they? They were supposed to.
Oh, that's right.
Was it Bilic? He was lined up before Bilic's first stint.
Yeah,
and then he went to Real Madrid.
And it was the same round that it was during that round before we got. But it's that we also were after Bielsa as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Bielsa didn't.
Well, he'd at least make it fun for with Bielsa.
Yeah, I mean, but is Bielsa somebody who's going to come and make an immediate impact? I mean, the first thing he'd want to do is a pre-season to get them fit enough to be able to play. You know, the one thing that Bielsa does is make his players run their nuts off. And I don't think we're in that position. You know, he's got a kind of a Conte level of attitude towards fitness, and I don't think that you can do that. I mean, he might have been able to do it before the World Cup, but he's not in the situation to do it now.
It feels like someone, you know, with just a fresh pair of eyes can come in and sort of turn the team around in the way that, ironically, David Moyes has done twice. It's so sad that, you know, that winter break was a kind of, you know, unintended opportunity to do what he did after Bilic and after Pellegrini, which is just look at the situation and slightly build it up again from the beginning. But I think he's just so blindly loyal to certain players and certain ways of... It's almost like he can't quite see Emerson because Cresswell is just in front of him in his line of vision the whole time. And he just can't get past how good a footballer Aaron Cresswell was about 5 years ago.
To be fair to the club and to be fair to Moyes, nobody saw this coming.
Nobody
would have predicted we'd be in this position. I think we all expected, and they probably expected, a sort of transitional season where we're not going to do so well, but we'll probably sort of bumble along mid-table. We've got good enough players to hold our own. And I think, you know, English football, the Premier, it's moving fast. It's moving forward at a rate of knots, isn't it? And you stand still for a second and everyone just zooms past you. You know, it feels like we're being outstripped by clubs like Brighton and Brentford, I think, there's been mismanagement, whatever, but you can't blame them for not having a kind of succession plan in place. It is that kind of moment where it's a crisis, and the question is whether or not, you know, is the devil you know or the devil you don't. We're not going to get the right manager to come in at this stage for the long-term future or the medium-term future of the club. You need a firefighter or a troubleshooter, don't you?
Yeah.
And the question is, you know, who would come, who's available, would they do a better firefighting job than what? Well, it's that new manager change of voice that you're probably looking for, isn't it?
I think your point, Jim, about no one saw it coming, I think it's collectively we did ignore how badly we finished last season.
Yeah,
when you think we were still only a couple of games away from
but Mark, you would have looked at those summer signings and thought, well, that's gone a fair way to addressing some of those issues.
And we also got slightly blinded and bejazzled by the Europa.
Yes,
by the Europa success, didn't we? And I think that, you know, okay, we got that close to a final, but in the end, you know, it was we completely ignored the collapsing form in the league that took us out of those top places anyway.
I think there's a real echo with 2002-03 as well. In that season, no one predicted that Trevor Sinclair and Sebastian Schemmel's form was just going to fall off a fucking cliff over that summer. Sinclair came back half the player he was. And a bit like, you know, Gerard Bowen, got picked every week by a manager who's assuming that he's just going to turn the corner and turn back into the old Trevor Sinclair, because, you know, you probably see him doing some great stuff in training and go, well, you know, once he's on the pitch again on Saturday, just needs a few games to get back into it. You know, he went off and was in the World Cup, probably fine. Schemmel's form absolutely deserted him, and he'd been like hammer of the year the previous year, I think. So suddenly our whole right side didn't work anymore. And I think poor old Roeder just wasn't ready for that to happen in the way that Moyes still can't come to terms with Gerard Bowen not being the player he was.
Suchek
are just shadows of the players they are last season. But we should have the depth of squad to sort of address that.
Let's say something about Suchek. I think that I watched the Leeds game and he seemed a lot stronger because they pushed him forward more. And that's kind of where he got his success in his first season. Then there was the whole stuff about Deck wanted to be the goal-scoring Brian Robson type midfielder. And that kind of hampered Suchek. And there's a flash of that in the Leeds game where he was further forward, where he did get more involved. And then the following game, he wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Are we taking turns like Shilton and Clements about who goes forward? I don't know. But you've got a guy who is clearly a threat. You know, he's one of the best aerial players in the Premier League when he's on form. Mm-hmm. You've got to allow him to be in that situation. He's not going to be kind of that, you know, that kind of.
So to follow on from that, George, why is Flynn Down seem to be so, you know, out of favour? I don't. You know, if you're talking about resting players, giving people an opportunity, that would be something. Lanzini seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth as well.
Well, Flynn Downs, I don't think he's pulled up any trees, has he? Is it somebody you might want to bring on to solidify a game after 75 minutes?
But we did play in Europe.
Yeah, but I mean, the Lanzini thing is baffling because he's fit, because he's on the bench every week, but he never gets a shout, he never gets a nod.
Someone we have used in the past as an impact player.
Yeah, and somebody who can unlock defences. You know, that goal last year against Crystal Palace, you know, just sort of absolutely fantastic the way he took him apart. And, for a long time last year, he seemed to have recovered from that knee problem. So the argument was always that after his serious knee injury, he was never going to be the same player. But he developed into a different player, a very effective player. But we don't seem to have him anywhere near.
Yeah,
start 11 or even an impact sub.
I think it's a really good point about Suchek. You know, that I mean, one of the problems we've got is scoring goals in the box. He's not picking on the whole. He's not picking Fornals, someone who is good at getting into decent positions in the box, although not the greatest finisher on earth. And when Suchek arrived, he was always making those late runs into the box, effective round the back of set pieces and so on, he's having to do a much more sort of box to boxy thing. We started against Wolves, didn't we, with a midfield three of Paqueta, Rice, and Suchek, and they with not very clearly defined set of roles, it seems to me. No. And you'd much rather see Rice do what he does best, which is sit in front and protect the back four and distribute the ball.
Just be perfect in that position.
Up for the team. And then, sorry?
Just be perfect in that position.
Yes, absolutely. Don't that's
play every ball. Don't make any mistakes.
It's what he does for England. It's what he should be doing for West Ham because he's just brilliant at it. And then that would free up, your Souček to play a slightly more advanced role, still breaking up attacks and that kind of thing like he was. And then I'd like to see, then you could push someone to get behind the striker. We don't get anyone close enough. You say we don't pass the ball to Schumacherville, but also we don't get anyone close enough to him.
Yeah.
Or Antonio when he's playing, as well. So that would allow either a Fornals or perhaps a Bowen to play a bit more inside. You know, none of this thinking seems to be going on. It's I think you're right. I think his head's a bit scrambled. I don't think he was expecting the wheels to fall off quite in this way, Moyes, and he hasn't got answers really at the moment.
So who realistically comes in? I know that there is a kind of fantasy land West Ham Twitter universe which talks about Tuchel and Pochettino and Luis Enrique. Yeah, okay, you've had your fun, lads. I remember what it's like when I had my first drink. And then there's the kind of Dyche, Benitez, Nuno, big names, potentially realistic. There's the people in other jobs, like Frank or Corberan. And then there's the kind of long shots like, let's do Kevin Nolan and Mark Noble. But what realistically, what would you do if you could? Aside from the fact you're not going to get Tuchel and Pochettino. So
I know what Sullivan would do. He'd point Warburton for the rest of the season.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we've got somebody with managerial experience on the staff. We don't have to pay anything for him. We can just, bump his salary up a bit and not do it. And I think it's kind of the on the cheap way. I can't see, there's no way on earth that we're going to go and get Tuchel Pochettino to come in and fight a relegation fight.
Not be the right sort of people. They're used to managing teams with sort of much bigger budgets than we've got.
Pochettino did really well at Southampton.
Yeah,
he did.
But he doesn't want to go back there, does he?
No, that's true.
I
don't know. Is Sullivan going to be a cheapskate when the issue is the relegation of the club? I'm not sure that his, any miserly instincts are actually going to swamp the fact that this appointment is being made because of the danger of being relegated.
But as Mark makes the point, I can't see where the manager's coming from. Can't sit there and say there's not a Moyes or a Bilic off a cab rank you can pull in and say, have a voice, make a difference. I'm racking my brain. I can't think of anyone that.
No.
Well, we can't really reach for Moyes for a third time.
No. It's a shame. It makes me really sad. It makes me really sad that this isn't working out, because I think he's one of the best managers we've ever had at the club, I think. And he has done things that sort of explain how football management actually works, in that you see him do something and it works the next game. But, as I think we've all agreed, he's gone into a kind of sort of slight freeze. He's frozen like a computer.
Yeah. Well, I think for a start, the worst thing that can happen is for us to draw with Everton this weekend, which doesn't advance our cause and will mean that Sullivan will just, probably delay pulling the trigger. I absolutely agree. I think West Ham as a club is ideally placed to be the launch pad for a young, thrusting, dynamic, progressively thinking young manager. We are perfect for that. And yet I don't think Sullivan has that kind of vision or ambition. He's never gone in and paid big compensation for another team's manager at the top of his game. They always employ unemployed managers.
Yeah.
And that's what will happen again. But my prediction is it'll be Dyche. I mean, I think you're right. I don't think we'll beat Everton the weekend, but we might not lose. Somewhere down the line within the next month or two, Moyes will get fired, and the options will be Warburton promoted or Dyche. I think that'll be it.
Yeah, I wonder what Mark Noble's thinking about. There? I wonder what Mark Noble's thinking about all of this. You know, now he's the director of football.
Yeah,
you know,
and hasn't he done his coaching badges? I think
has he?
Yeah, I think
16 days into the job,
he was certainly doing them. He was certainly doing them. Yeah. I assume he's done them.
I mean, I think, you know, I thought his role was more of kind of a cultural role to kind of bring the teams all in a line rather than sort of be the kind of the guy that pulls the trigger.
I'm sort of not necessarily speculating about what he's thinking in terms of him possibly taking over as manager, but what in terms of his new job, he feels he can knock on someone's door and go in and say, or, you know, what he can go and knock on David Moyes' door and go in and say to, you know, the bloke who was his manager a year or two ago. It's a slightly, you know, possibly a slightly awkward dynamic.
Yeah, now David, that Moyes... David, can I have a word?
Coffee
without me.
He's the director of football.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yes, I sort of slightly fear Dyche as well. You know, his last notable action was to take Burnley down, wasn't it?
And I know, I appreciate the whole tone of this has been sort of fairly maudlin, but there are a few other teams out there that will want Dyche. You know, Everton will want Dyche.
Yeah.
Leicester may well want Dyche.
Yeah.
You know, it's not ridiculous that Bournemouth may decide the Gary O'Neill revival is over. You know, there's plenty of teams out there, even Leeds. You know, even Leeds, if they have a downturn, it's not like Dyche sitting there waiting for only one phone call.
No.
And I'm not saying that means that we should panic, of course not, but it just comes to something where even, and no disrespect to Sean Dyche, because he obviously achieved, he got Burnley into Europe, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
You know.
It's interesting, as you say that, Mark, it's interesting that there are a number of clubs in a very similar boat, aren't there? You think of Rodgers at Leicester. It's a very similar thing. I think we talked about it last week, that kind of modern players have sort of short attention spans, don't they? They stop listening to managers, or they stop being convinced by managers very, very quickly. They get bored with the routines of training, one suspects. They just, and the voice, you know, and not many managers get into that supremo position where they can just push through that and defy the player power. You know, you sense that's the battle that Ten Hag has had and is having at the moment at Man United, and seems to be winning it, doesn't he? He's just toughed it out with Ronaldo and so on. But they weren't listening to him to start with, were they? You know, you'd have thought Rodgers would have been in that kind of position at Leicester, really, wouldn't you, in a way? But... he's in the same boat. They're in the same boat. We could end up with him. I mean, it could be a merry-go-round, you know.
Well, he wasn't too far down the betting when I looked. But Rodgers, you know, for all his faults, came here and did an absolute number on us, you know, 2 months ago. I mean, which is where the kind of, you know, the alarm bell started ringing, really, those Palace, Fulham, Leicester games at home, where we, you know, sort of, again, it was followed the pattern of playing quite well for a while and having decent spells of control, but then absolutely... failing to score and getting punished for it. I mean, looking at the table now, you know, it's the bottom seven, there's 2 points between them.
Yeah.
You know, two wins are out of it, or in some sort of illusionary way. But
it may be because they're all that group like that. It may only take, I say only, 35, maybe 36 might keep you up.
Yeah,
that's still another 21 points. You know,
quite often does. 36 quite often would keep you up, I think.
In a funny way, it's were it not quite as precarious as it is, and those, you know, 2 points separating seven teams makes it actually not as precarious as it has been in recent years. It sort of makes it quite an attractive job in some ways. We're sort of about to kind of go into the latter stages of a European competition. We've got possible new investment coming in and expansion, you know, because this deadline's this 2023 deadline's gone where, you know, Sugo or Sue can sell the club now. You know, it's a sort of an attractive proposition in a way. But obviously any manager who can read a newspaper knows that we're actually in trouble. And that's why the appointment is happening.
The death of David Gold has put a huge spanner in the works when it comes to any sale, because, you know, there could be 2 years of probate to sort out those shares.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
They've got to be held on to, you know, the Gold sisters will want to hang on to that money, hang on to those shares, otherwise there'll be, you know, all sorts of tax liabilities that they, if they try to get rid of them quickly. So it could be another 2 years before, you know, they want to sell their shares.
And so, and your point, sorry, Phil, just about that, your point there about the fact that it could potentially be attractive for someone, that, you know, we're comparatively well-resourced, there is, you know, alleged money coming in, we've got a decent squad, and as you say, we're in the late stages of European competition. But I still think whoever that manager comes in, it's going to be very unlikely they're going to turn around and say, yeah, fine, I'll just take it till May. It's no problem.
You know,
someone's going to want at least 18 months, aren't they?
I mean, George probably got clearer view than this, but I imagine also the prospect of working for Sullivan never makes it an attractive prospect. His track record is not great, is it? I mean, it feels terribly shame. I feel sorry that I think the timing is going to work out such that we will have to appoint a manager before Chelsea sack Potter, because I think Chelsea will sack Potter quite soon. And he would be a perfect fit for us, I think. He would have been great, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose it's just a question of predictions for the weekend's game. Earlier this week, I sort of thought, I think we're going to get beat.
We have no real record. I know we beat them both twice last season, but usually Everton are a team that really annoy us, aren't they? They're a team we've got no real kind of record against. I just sort of feel that this is the last throw, and I think we will win, and that will confuse the matter. I take George's point. Two wins gets us out of it. Yeah, great. And I think we will get one on Saturday. It will be bizarre, though. George will remind me of that at half time when we're sitting in block 2-4-1 on Saturday going, I think we'll win, and we'll win 3-1. I think that, you know, Everton are one of the very few teams who are worse than us.
Yeah, yeah. George, what do you reckon?
I think it will be a confusing and unconvincing win. I think 3-1 is, that involves us scoring three goals, which I think is, I remember my first quaalude too. But I think I think a 1-0 win, because I think they're bloody awful as well. Although I did notice that Calvert-Lewin looked a bit lively when he, for the first time in a while on Match of the Day.
Yes.
But I think a 1-0 win, a confusing 1-0 win, and, you know, possibly, you know, a carer off Kerr's arse, a la John Moncur at Leicester all those years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll just confuse us. It'll move us up the table, and we'll be left in stasis, not knowing what to do.
Yeah. Jim? Yeah.
Had to take negatives from a positive.
I think the players will realise that, you know, it is very likely that if they don't get a result, he will get sacked. I think they will lift it a little bit for that. But I think we're in a real rut when it comes to attacking play. There, obviously, I think it's going to be a desperately poor game, and it'll be 1-1.
Fans' mood will be interesting, won't it? I mean, you're about to go.
Yeah. For, it'll be toxic on all sides of the ground, won't it?
With intensity. They just have to go out and start like they finished the game against Wolves. Finished so many games.
What happened to Brentford was, you know, we started really well. And Jim, I said last week, I turned to you and said, if we don't, you know, score in this period of pressure, this game's going to turn really bad. And it did. And in the second half of that game, we were almost depressed at the notion of having to mount another attack on their goal. They started to become increasingly lackluster, followed the same pattern down the left. Benrahma runs sort of towards the corner flag, stops because his way is barred, turns back, gives it to Emerson or Cresswell, who then give it to him, who thinks about cutting inside, takes it a couple of paces, thinks, no, I won't cut inside, plays it to Rice. By now, the entire team is back, plays it over to Soufal, Soufal gentle cross to the goalkeeper, you know? And it just became, we demoralized ourselves with our attacking play. We depressed ourselves. It was amazing. It wasn't being under the cosh. We, in fact, had tons of possession, but we became depressed at the idea of having the ball and having to mount an attack on the other team's goal. It was very extraordinary. And you know, and that lost the fans. The fans really sensed that there was just this sort of, you know, ennui among the team, and they just weren't giving anything back to the fans, really. I feel very guilty predicting a defeat, so I'm going to say 2-2. A 2-2 draw. Yes. Well, this has been a slightly sad stop hammer time, but he is sharing the misery with me were Jim Grant.
Cheerio.
Mark Sandell.
Bye.
And George Mann.
Good evening.
Come on, you Irons.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.